Hello and welcome to another episode of Beer Books with me, Daisy Ray.
And me, April Berry.
Today, we are back to reviewing books. We love this part of the podcast, almost as much as I like writing flash fiction. Not that you're supposed to have a favourite. What are we reviewing?
So the book that we are reviewing on today's podcast is Even a Pandemic Can't Stop Love and Murder, written by A.E.S. O'Neill, and is the first in what appears to be a trilogy of books. So what's it about, Daisy?
I will tell you. The write-up for the book reads a little bit like this. O'Neill's novel is an intriguing crime story packed with shady characters, double-dealing and violence. It's also a romantic drama about a man struggling to adjust to civilian life, PTSD and the possibility of true love. While these conflicting narrative strands seem incompatible, O'Neill confidently weaves them into a complementary whole. Albie and Ginger's romance is brimming with witty dialogue, comedic interludes and conflict. As readers worry about their well-being, the dramatic tension becomes impactful. Albie is a believable, psychologically troubled hero, struggling to adjust to the small life prescribed to him. And Ginger provides the perfect antidote to Albie's moodiness. A decent gallery of supporting characters help round out the narrative. However, Albie and Ginger are the novel's driving force, and thankfully for thriller fans, they are well worth spending time with. I don't wholly agree with the blurb for this book. Ginger and Albie met exactly 1 week ago before the end of the book, so how they can manage to have such a enriched, brilliant start to a romance and all that comedic value just doesn't compute, and I have read it to the end.
Well, I didn't read it to the end, and I didn't even get to where Albie had met Ginger, so I don't agree with that. And a decent gallery of characters. They were all murdering loonies.
Yeah, but if you're reading that kind of book, isn't that what you're looking for?
It is. I mean, I have got to say that it was the description of the book on Amazon, I think, that led us to actually saying we'll read this book. We were reached out to by the author's publicist.
We did offer to have them on the podcast.
So they sent us the book to read in the hopes that we would review it on the podcast. We said yes, given all the write-ups. We persevered and we continued with this book. Now, there's a review on Amazon about this book that I agree with the first line of it. It says, a close friend from Philly put me onto this amazing mystery, which moves like a speeding freight train rumbling down the side of a mountain. I could not agree more. It then says the story put me under its spell from the opening pages and never let go. It was more like a bloody antiviral antidote to snake venom for me.
I'm beginning to get the impression you weren't overly enamoured with this one.
No, not at all. And we'll leave it for my review because possibly I'm giving it a bit of a disservice. But it says, with crisp dialogue, vivid descriptions and a plot that unfolds under the forgiving weight of the current pandemic. Now, I understand that, but the vivid descriptions, I would disagree with that completely because I've spent most of my time on Google trying to find out where I was.
Well, yeah, you did say that you were a little bit lost with the place names being relevant to their country and ours.
Yeah. In terms of the reviews that are on here, nobody's put a negative review on. Is it now? Is it that people do not want to put negative reviews on Amazon or on Goodreads or in anywhere like that?
Well, it's not like there's a lot of reviews. So maybe these are the handful of people that actually enjoyed the book and felt like they wanted to put a review on. I'll play devil's advocate here.
You do that very well.
Thank you very much. I will read a review as well. So this is a 5-star review from Ms. Shreve, and it was given in 2021. So this book's been out for a little while. It's not brand new. And she says, this novel gripped me from the start, from Iraq to New Jersey. What a journey. And the ending that is the beginning of volume 2, there are really bad guys doing their thing, entangling hired day workers, families and lovers. Great dialogue brings you into the narrative and characters leaving you wanting more. I can't wait to see where Ginger and her new dance partner go in volume 2. I have to say that there are a vast cast of characters. They are mostly dodgy and proper murky, and I do like murky and dangerous and dark. What I will say, though, is that the Ginger-Albie relationship, the great love story that is precisely 1 week long, doesn't cut it for me at all. As they are leaving and they are setting up for book two, Ginger is still, well, I don't know you. I've only known you a week. I don't know anything about you. You don't know anything about me. And we're supposed to be married. And it's just contrived. That's the word I'm looking for. It's contrived. The love story is not there. It's been thrown in to promote the next book, in my humble opinion.
I've got to say, I agree with what you've said there. But anyway, let's have a listen to what I did have to think about the book. So, even a pandemic can't stop love and murder. It's a great title for a book. The pandemic was a time where a lot of people, because there wasn't a lot else to do, tapped into their creative side. Hell, that's where the podcast was born. This is another book that we have read that was possibly finished during this time. I get the impression that it was written over quite a few years. Anyway, what did I think about it? I hate to be negative about anybody's work as they've put time, effort and energy into creating the words in front of me on the page. This book is set over a week's time span. We're introduced to a cast of characters that I had a bit of difficulty actually understanding. It does bear out that saying truth is stranger than fiction, because from my understanding of this is book one in a trilogy, and I found the whole thing weird, bizarre, and frankly hard to follow. One plus point is I did feel like I was living the story, though I'm not sure that was entirely because of the content of the book, or that it took me 3 days to read about 3 days in the life of Albie, and there I stopped. I do feel like I'm shortchanging an author when I fail to read a book, but there's only so much torture one person can endure. Most authors who are writing for an international audience will make sure that references to places, shops and restaurants are either explained so the reader can relate, or they are internationally known so the reader can just seamlessly carry on reading. I found myself Googling so much. Camden. Ah, now there's a place I know. Wrong. Camden, New York was where I was supposed to be. The not knowing the bigger picture of the book setting really put me off. Does that mean I'm setting my ways? Possibly. But there are too many references to things that were alien to me, but possibly are so familiar to people living in the States. The other thing that irritated me was that I read the book on an e-reader, and there were some clickable links in there that didn't work. For God's sake, take them out. Don't disappoint the reader. It's a bit of bad editing going on there. The author isn't a bad writer, but the book for me was just chaotic, peppered with a few profound moments, insight into the softer side of some of the characters, but mainly a look at the more unsavoury side of the human makeup. Will I be reading the other two books in the trilogy? Emphatically no, but don't let my review put you off.
That was a very honest review, April.
It's how I felt. It was difficult for me. Now, I don't know whether because I'm foggy-headed, I'm getting old, I'm less able to compute things, but it was just chaos.
Too much going on for you to keep up with.
Yeah, for it to flow.
I don't think we have to like everything we read. I think you are doing the right thing by giving an honest review of what you've read. You're also right in that if the book is not for you, then why do you need to struggle all the way to the end of it if it's not really pushing your buttons and you're not getting a lot from it other than more questions rather than following a story and excited to know what's happening next? So I do agree with that.
I couldn't have cared less what happened next, if I'm honest.
Okay.
So I've read 3 days in the life of Albie, so let's hope that the 4, 5, 6 and 7, something a little bit more exciting happened.
Well, you're also going to give us a little bit of a reading.
I am. Now, I'm not going to read anything of the main story. I've skipped right to the very end of the book. And I did that purposefully because I thought to myself, well, if I skip to the very, very end of the book, perhaps I might understand what's going on in the book. But I didn't.
But it's also the end of the book is a setup for book two. So it might be quite a useful bit of a reading to give to our listeners. It might pique their interest while it's not piquing yours.
Okay.
So let's have a listen.
After they had met the handlers by the Camden Aquarium and had been given their new identities, driver's licenses, social security numbers, phones, cash, and instructions, and had endured being basically yelled at for all the trouble he'd caused them, he and Ginger had turned round and robotically walked over to his truck, supposedly to begin their drive to the Benjamin Franklin Bridge using the Vine Street Expressway, since it was the only major artery open, and head west as fast as they could. However, as she was getting in, Ginger glanced back. Albie was just putting the key in the ignition, but that didn't seem to matter to her. She suddenly ducked her head back out the door, jumped back down to the ground, and slammed the door behind her. The next thing he knew, she was stomping over to where the handlers were still standing by their car. Albie took a deep breath, then he jumped out. At that point, she was already in the main handler's face. "Who are you to judge us? You've got a lot of balls, and if I had my bat, I'd whack you one right now." Albie was confused. What had he missed? She looked ready to punch the guy. Her face was red, only one shade lighter than her hair. He had seen this in the diner with that crazy Jagger. "It's none of your business that we only met a week ago and now you're married." But clearly the guy's sarcastic tone said just the opposite. "Have you any idea the shit he took on back there?" She pointed at Albie, but kept her eyes on the handler. "Didn't he take down something you guys needed taking down? The bank, mob, bad guy?" "We're not in the criminal division, lady. Our focus is protection, stopping shitstorms." Ginger slammed her foot down in fury. The two black-suited cliches looked around like no one was there, blithely checking their nails. Then one of them said, as if to no one in particular, "Gotta go, late for church." And with that, they hopped back into their large electric Chevy Kite, black of course, she noted, and took off. Ginger turned to Albie. Her look said it all, conveying both a question and a statement. "Albie, you create shitstorms." She'd had it. So I didn't really even understand that. I did understand it, but I didn't.
Yeah, but I think the reason you didn't understand it is because you only read the first 3 days and you haven't read about Ginger and Albie meeting and their story or why they're in the car or what they're doing or why they're doing it. So I think it's just disjointed, that's all.
Yeah, possibly. Do I get from that then? I better not give it away, actually. I don't know. I won't even ask that question.
I'll tell you what it is. That part of the reading, it sets up for the next book, but you do have to have read the first book. Otherwise, book two, I am assuming, is not going to make a great deal of sense.
Okay. Well, like I say, I'm not interested in finding out what happens to Albie and Ginger. I wasn't even interested in this book, so I'm damn sure I'm not picking up book two. Yeah, let's have your review.
Okay. So this is what I thought of Even a Pandemic Can't Stop Love and Murder. 2 years ago, back in his hospital room in Baghdad, Albie O'Brien's handlers had informed him that he was on a militant Iraqi hit list after being set up by some part of the US government. One of his handlers told him that he could disappear anywhere in the world, and he chose Cherry Hill, New Jersey, where his sister and nephew Stephen live. Albie is dealing with PTSD nightmares and stays away from any situation where he might be recognised. Until, that is, he hears about some renovation work at a local bank that pays well, and all he has to do is gather up some men, drop them off to work at night and pick them back up in the morning. So again, he will be staying out of the way and avoid being recognised. What he doesn't know is that this bank is owned by the mob, and one of his crew is about to steal something that puts Albie and just about everyone else in this story in the gun sights of a terrifying mob hitman. Even a Pandemic Can't Stop Love and Murder is based on a true story. It was told to author Alfred O'Neill years ago by his father. I picked this book up three times to start reading it, and I just couldn't engage beyond chapter one. I know that Albie being in Iraq sets the scene for the story, and if it wasn't for the events in Iraq, Albie wouldn't be living where and how he was for the story to develop. But for me, the beginning just didn't engage me, and if I didn't have to read it for the podcast, it may be that I never would have got beyond that. But when something doesn't work for me, I will try an alternative. So I downloaded the audio version of the book and had the narrator read it to me so that I wouldn't give up a fourth time. I have to say, I was rather pleased and surprised that the story took quite the turn, and I enjoyed getting to know Albie. He is a realistically flawed man, and he doesn't always know how to handle life and all it has thrown at him. Albie is the best character in the book. There is a lot more to be explored here for Albie and for Ginger. Albie runs a lot deeper than we know as a reader so far, and I'd like to know where his character traits came from. We are left with the definite impression of a rich and colourful backstory for Ginger too. So for generosity's sake, I'm going to say that Ginger isn't as well-rounded a character because she will hopefully be explored in more detail in the next book in this series. As I got into this book, it turned out there was a lot to keep me engaged, so it was worth persevering. Dodgy dealings, more than your average amount of mindless murders, and plenty of morally murky characters. I'm not sure that I would give it a recommendation as a read, but I am glad I persevered.
I suppose as you were going through that review, I was thinking, yeah, fair comment. I mean, obviously, I just stopped and didn't get to know Ginger at all.
Yeah.
Maybe I should have persevered, I don't know, but I would just, it was like wading through treacle for me.
But if it didn't engage you, why would you put yourself through it? It was sheer stubbornness that got me to download the audiobook.
Your stubborn trait came in handy then?
On this occasion, yes, but that said, if it hadn't been for the podcast, as I said, I wouldn't have finished it. I'd have put it down after chapter one. I wouldn't have even read chapter two.
Yeah, see, I'm not quite as generous as you are. I could come on and just go, no, it's not worth reading.
I get that.
I mean, one of the things I think that disappointed me more than anything else with this is that when we read a previous book in this season, which was based on somebody's father's true story.
Yes.
And I think I was expecting it to be a lot more engaging and not just mindless murder, because one of the things that I'm struggling to get straight in my mind is that we know that in America, the gun laws are a lot laxer than they are here. But I'm absolutely sure that people just don't walk around the streets killing people.
I believe from the story that this mob hitman that is going around killing everybody willy-nilly, it doesn't just question people. It's like, well, you're no good to me any longer. Bang, you're dead. Is an ex-policeman, and the reason he's not a policeman any longer is because his death count was higher than anybody else in existence, or I got that impression anyway.
Yeah, but surely ordinary normal citizens living ordinary normal lives.
None of these people were ordinary. They're all mob-related, and then you've got US government involved. There are no everyday people in this story, really, other than maybe Ginger, but from the hints at the end of the book and all the stuff that alludes to Ginger's past life, I don't think she's ordinary either. I think we're going to find out that she is far from it.
I'll take your word for it. You still haven't got me convinced that in the normal walk of life,
yeah,
which is what most people live in,
yeah,
that people are not vanishing from their inner circle or outer circle without any questions being asked. Can you imagine? You've got a group of friends and acquaintances that spread far and wide. Now, if one of those went unexplainably missing one day, would you not ask some questions about where they were? Now, even if that person was engaged in mob activity, at some point, somebody would be asking a question, where are they? Maybe I'm not explaining myself very well here, but mindless murder. There's got to be a reason for me for murder.
for that particular character in this book, they'd outlived their usefulness. They didn't need a reason to live any longer. Maybe that's all it took for him.
Oh, my God, I would have been killed off hundreds of times by hundreds of people that I know then at this point.
I'd have killed you several times over.
There you go, you see. And likewise. Oh, you've outlived your usefulness for this particular point. Bang, you're dead.
What I wanted to say to you is, I think what you've done is you've compared, and you shouldn't have done it. You've read the previous book in this season, and I know the one you're referring to. You're referring to Victor as the main character written by Ivan Hernandez. But you can't compare books that way. It's like saying which is your favourite child. You might have one in your head secretly, but you can't tell anybody. It's just not the done thing. You can't compare it.
I think you're right, because don't forget, the last book we reviewed, I compared that as well. So maybe that's a flaw in my character.
I don't know if I would call it a flaw.
I found a flaw in my character.
Oh, shut your face. Did you not think there were any?
No.
Uh-huh. All right, let's go with that then. It's just not the done thing. Anyway, enough about even the pandemic. Can't stop love and murder. Let's move on to what we're doing next week.
I'm looking forward to next week's flash fiction.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that because you've written something absolutely wonderful?
Because I'm writing about somebody that I know.
Okay, yeah, I get that. For those that don't know, Ruby is the dog that's in the picture running around smiling on the beach for the prompt for next week's flash fiction. And Ruby is my little Shih Tzu, and she is adorable.
She is adorable, and Ruby came to stay with her Auntie April a few weeks ago.
She did.
She did, and she loved it. She enjoyed it.
She slept most of the time.
Yeah, on my bed.
I like the way that you've got a three-story house, and she just wanders off up two flights and goes and takes herself to bed even when you're not there.
Yeah, because she doesn't go up your stairs at all, does she?
No, she doesn't. But the only thing up the stairs in this house is the attic where I do the recording for the podcast. There are no bedrooms or anything comfy for Ruby up here.
I did have to laugh, though, sort of talking about Ruby, is that I put her bed, the one she sleeps in my bedroom in the corner, and she just took one disdainful look at it, put a paws on my bed and thought, can I get up there? Did a little back pedal and a little jump, and there she was, and there she stayed. She didn't even move when I went to the bathroom. The only time she moved was when I got up in the morning to get ready for work. Bless her. Anyway, enough about Ruby. So that's who our flash fiction is about. And I can't wait. I've got something really, really good and a bit twisted in my head, but...
Ooh, okay. I am quite a fan of a little bit twisted, I have to say. So I am looking forward to the stories next week. Thank you again, as always, to everybody that submits stories for us. We love your work. So until next week, take care of yourselves.
Goodbye, everybody, and we'll see you next week with Ruby. Thank you for joining us. Now you've had a listen, why not pop over and join us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter?
And if you want to send in your flash fiction submissions, you just need to email us at bearbookspod1@gmail.com. And now that you're part of the Bear Books family, why not share us with all the bookworms and creatives in your life?